Blog Talk Radio.
Texas is on Wednesday, November the 6th, the day after the election. And we're going to take a look at that election today with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We're going to be reviewing what happened and how did it happen. It's one of these elections that I guess we're going to be talking about for a long time, We've got a lot of issues to get into with Bill today. The Senate, of course, the House, the media. The polling data was not always very consistent. And, of course, the Trump victory itself, which is pretty remarkable and, to say the least, historic. So let me say hello to our good friend Bill Katz. Bill, I guess we've seen a few, but this one is pretty interesting, huh, Bill?
More than interesting. I don't think there was any election in American history that compares to it. I mean, just look at the series of events. If you wrote a novel about that and sent it in to a publisher, they turn it down on the grounds that nobody would believe it. It's just one event after another.
I know. And here's what I was thinking about, Bill, right before we started this. I was thinking, I went back to the summer of 2022, early August. I was talking to some people, and I said, I don't think Trump is going to be the nominee. In fact, I didn't want him to be the nominee back then. I thought we should turn the page and go to somebody like DeSantis or whatever, because I felt that Trump's time had come. You know, we were happy with the job that he did, but it was time to move on, as often happens in life. You have to move on.
Go ahead.
Yeah, then the FBI goes into his home, Bill.
Yeah.
And it's like all of a sudden that revives him. His political fortunes change. And then, you know, here we are. I really believe that had they never gone into his home that summer, that he would have never been able to come back. And I think DeSantis would have been the nominee. That's just my guess, Bill. But this is such an incredible story, like you say. No, if you tried to publish it, it wouldn't get published. I mean, people would turn it down for being fake.
I think you're right, and I think that the elements around Donald Trump, the things that have happened to him that have not happened to any other president, being indicted, being convicted, being threatened, by an FBI raid, being treated as horribly as he was, no matter what you think of him. And I think most people have a very mixed feeling about Donald Trump. The one comment you hear often is, I really don't like him, and I don't like the way he speaks, but he is very good on the issues. And I think, by the way, that may be the key to why he won. I'm recalling a line from Jack Warner, who was the head of Warner Brothers, the movie company. He was one of the original Warner Brothers, and he used to have a saying. Whenever he fired somebody, which was often, he would say, "I don't want to see that SOB in here again," and then he'd pause and say, "Until I need him." And I think that what Donald Trump became was the unwanted but needed president. People felt
the beautiful description, Bill. That is so true.
Yes.
That is so true. I keep thinking, Bill, that I don't know if you're familiar with the former coach of the Patriots, Bill Belichick. I think it's Belichick is his name, or Belichick. Well, everybody hates him. I mean, all the players that go through that team hate him. He goes through coaches like crazy. The only person who gets along with him is Brady, the quarterback, but everybody else, you know.
Yes.
And even Brady has had his problems. But the fans love him. And the reason
yes.
the fans love him is because he's got six trophies on the wall.
That's exactly right.
And I think to some extent there is that attitude with Trump. But, Bill, when I look at the electoral map, you're in New York, I'm in Texas. The total vote in New York for Trump, I think, was he lost by 10 points, I think. New Jersey was even closer.
Ten,
right? Well, in Texas
and it used
was...
to be. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I said
it used,
to be a much larger division. Yes.
A much larger spread.
And he said, I'm going to try to take New York. He didn't, but he came much closer to other people. He has a determination that is almost beyond belief. I don't know how many people could take what has been thrown at him in the last year and thrown at his family. And the family yeah. remains loyal. There are many people who despise him. You know, I recall a recording that Edward R. Murrow did in the 1950s called I Can Hear It Now. It was a commercial recording in which he played events of recent history, parts of speeches, parts of broadcasts. And when he got to the incidents of Franklin D. Roosevelt's funeral, Franklin D. Roosevelt's death was a shock. Nobody knew he was sick, not in the general public. And when it occurred, it just was a bullet out of the air. To many people, he was the only president they ever knew. He had been elected four times. And I recall Murrow saying, for those who loved him, and there were many, and those who hated him, and there were many, he was the central pivot of their lives. And that's true. I think when people began to think about Donald Trump, they said, this man fights. This man will do it for the country. He did it once before. What we have now cannot go on. And I think there was a lot of that. I think the people of the country showed, even in the way the vote was distributed, how thoughtful they are. I mean, this was not a public that was just going to go to the polls and elect somebody because they had a letter next to their name. It's a remarkable electorate. The effect on young African American men, the fact that the women's vote did not divide as it was supposed to, women didn't follow the script they were given. They said, in effect, we will make our own decisions. He did much better among women than people expected. The ideas that he has that people know really what they're getting into. He will be a strong president. And when somebody threatens us, I think safety played a great role in this campaign. People feel unsafe. They feel unsafe sending their children to school. They feel unsafe as their teenage children go off to college. And they feel unsafe when they're walking down the block in their own neighborhood, especially at night.
Right.
And I think safety is a great issue in any campaign. All the things came together, and Trump made them work. And you've got to give the man credit. We've talked about this before. I have my own doubts about him as a person. I know people who would not vote for him under any circumstances. But as Lincoln said of Grant, this man fights.
That's exactly right. But I was thinking when you mentioned the importance of safety when people vote. Today is the anniversary of the 1968 Nixon election. The first time he won. And
yes.
that election was largely a law and order election when people felt unsafe. You know, they felt unsafe and they felt that the country was going nutty and they needed, you know, somebody tough to deal with it. And so I think that has a lot with it. But Bill, the things that are happening in the country are so crazy. And I'll go to New York, where the state of New York goes after this squirrel or whatever whatever it is. Okay. And I'm sitting there. I mean, I'm sitting there, and let's say I lived in New York, and, you know, there are rats everywhere from what I understand. The rat population has, increased tremendously. Your grandmother cannot walk down to post a letter because they're going to steal her purse. You know, the bodegas, the owners of bodegas are constantly being harassed by people stealing. The subways are not safe. So all of this is happening in the state of New York, and I'm just using New York as an example because you could say the same thing about other cities. And in the middle of all of this, the state decides that what is really important is to go after this little animal. Yes. And it just looks to the country like this is crazy, that this is our priorities are all messed up, Bill.
Well, and our priorities often are messed up. I mean, look what's been done to the Department of Defense under Biden. It's being turned into a social service agency. I mean, where
right.
our soldiers, you know, our soldiers are there to win wars. Well, actually, they're there to prevent wars. And if they can't, to win them. They're not there to be social service agents. The armed forces have done a very good job of integrating minorities into the force. And along comes these woke people who say that's not good enough. That must be your priority. Well, no, their priority is to be ready for war, to prevent a war. And I think that will end now. I think it'll end very abruptly. I think that too, you know, it's an election campaign is really about a buildup of feelings. It's not one feeling you get about a president or about a candidate. It's many over a period of time. And I think this just was not Kamala Harris's time. If this were a period of easy peace and great prosperity for everyone, it might have been a different situation. But she was clearly not ready for the campaign. I mean, and who is? You know, I think anything I learned when the days when I was an intern in politics is running for president has got to be the hardest job in the world. It's just grueling.
Right.
You realize they're out there. And you watch Trump, and this is his third rally of the day, and he is absolutely on target. I don't know how the man does it. I don't know how he endures the exhaustion. She clearly was not ready. I mean, 15 weeks ago, she was the vice president who everybody – well, not everybody, but a number of people were trying to get off the Biden ticket because she was seen as a liability. And here she is as a presidential candidate and a defeated one. This sounds terribly cynical, but I think that it is true. I think Biden must, in a certain way, be very, very pleased today.
Well, I'm, you know, it's funny. Everybody was talking yesterday about the First Lady dressed in red. Did you see that?
Yes. Yes.
He is wearing a red pantsuit, and somebody was saying I was on one of the Spanish channels last night, and the host said, "Do you think she's trying to send a message on election day? The First Lady wearing a red pantsuit?"
Yes, yes.
I said, "Well, I don't know. I cannot get into the head of the First Lady, but I know one thing: having been married for a long time, that women do dress with a purpose." And I doubt very much that on election day, the First Lady of the president, or nobody told her, or she didn't realize that if she wore a red pantsuit, that was going to create conversation at the very least. So, I mean, I feel very strongly that the Joe and Jill Biden, the president and the First Lady, were not exactly trying to help her. I think that's obvious by some of the things that happened, like his comments about, you know, people being garbage and just anything that he did. You know, it didn't look to me like he was a man who was trying to help her at all. And I don't think he's going to be present today when she delivers, whenever she starts. He's already running late. But whenever she starts her concession speech, I don't think he's going to be there. And that might be the last. I mean, they may not even see each other again, Bill, until Inauguration Day when they both go to the inauguration. I mean, I don't think they like each other. But I'll tell you something, Bill. She was not ready for this. And I think the American people picked up on that. And because this is a lady, she did create a lot of enthusiasm when they picked her. That's true. A lot of that was because they were so disenchanted with Joe Biden. So it was like, you know, that reason. But she did create a lot of enthusiasm, and, you know, she was doing well. But then people began to see her unwillingness to answer questions, her unwillingness to do a press conference. I don't think that a person who refuses to do a press conference, Bill, should be president of the United States. I just think that if you cannot handle a press conference and deal with reporters who can be obnoxious, then you cannot do the job of president, Bill.
That's exactly right. And I think she had about her an unlikability, which she is. Oh, this has always cursed her, by the way. You know, many people, even when she was in California, voted for her. And they said, I don't really like her. You know, but I'd like to see a woman in this job and this and that. And she was always attractive. She has delivered speeches that have been good. I have no idea why she just collapsed in that area. A few days ago, we read, did we not, that she was on a podcast, a well-known podcast, had an interview, and the proprietor of the podcast heard the interview and thought it was so bad he refused to use it, that she was so bad. You just wonder why. Yeah.
She just didn't have whatever it is, whatever you want to call it, style, confidence,
right,
whatever you want to call it. She just didn't have it, and I think it became apparent. And when you look at, by the way, you mentioned the women's vote, but before you do, I got to tell you, a friend of mine who works in the media sent me. He knew that I was with you on the air, and he sent me a link or a story that Donald Trump has just flipped the most Hispanic county.
Yes,
in Texas.
In America.
County. I think I told you. Yeah, I think I told you.
Yes.
And he said, make sure Bill hears this. And I said, yes, well, I will. And here's the interesting thing about Star County, Bill. This goes back to Lyndon Johnson. Remember the story mm-hmm. about the missing box that they found in 1948?
Well, yes.
This is the county. This is where it happened.
Well, that's why they called him Landslide Lyndon.
That's it. So this is the county where that happened in South. Now, I think the geographic division of the county is probably a little different because of all the gerrymandering and all the growth in Texas. I'm sure it's not identical to what it was when LBJ was living there. But anyway, he took a county that's 97% Hispanic and he flipped it. And that is really quite remarkable. What he did with Hispanics here in Texas and in Florida was really unbelievable, Bill. If you just look at the numbers, Texas, he did a fantastic job. Florida, he did a fantastic job. In both cases, he won Texas and he won Florida by about 15 points. And in both cases, it's because of Hispanics, Bill.
That's exactly right. And what is interesting is that neither state was close. I mean, they were saying toward the end that the gap is narrowing in Texas, and what's going to happen to Ted Cruz? Ted Cruz won by 10 points. The gap was nowhere near as wide as it was reported. Look, the pollsters have a lot of explaining to do, but I think that, you know, I always say to my readers, as you know, a poll is only a moment in time, and it isn't necessarily accurate. And we use polls at Urgent Agenda only to try to find trends, never the exact figure. You're never going to get the exact figure.
Well, that's right. No, I'm sorry. I wanted to say about the poll in Iowa.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I heard winning by 3 points, and he ends up winning by 15. I mean, that is simply a case of bad sampling, either bad sample or wishful thinking on the part of the...
A poll can be altered, and the results can be altered simply by the way the question is asked and the tone of the pollster. And they know that. They know that. And also, many people don't realize that I was very privileged when I went to the Graduate School of Journalism at Columbia to have as one of my instructors Samuel Lubell. Samuel Lubell was one of the founders of American political polling. Wrote a book that is used, I think, even today as a textbook. And, you know, he said, even the weather can affect the results of a poll. The results of a poll can be affected by how the recipient thought of that pollster's last report. Maybe he or she was offended by it. There are so many factors that go into it. One thing about this election is that the pollsters were trying to provide more information than they usually do. They were trying to be as transparent as possible. I think there's going to be a lot of study by real political scientists and real historians of just how some of the polls were off and off consistently. The question was asked, as you know, in fact, we discussed it, how so many polls could be that close together. And, you know, are the polls that accurate? Are they that great? That they're that good? Probably not. There's usually one outlier or two outliers. In this case, people were really suspicious of those polls. And they said, well, maybe this is actually what happened. And there was one of the pollsters on last night, one who has a very good reputation, and he said, look, basically the polls were accurate. They were very, very close. They were responsible, but they were on the wrong track. I mean, you can be responsible and say that the people are all divided, or the voters are all divided by only a few points, but be wrong on where those few points are. So many of them thought it was that close, and it turned out that, yes, it was, but the edge went to Trump.
Yeah. Well, here in Texas, I mean, with respect to Ted Cruz, I mean, they were way off. And to Trump, they were way off. I mean, there were literally people saying that Colin Allred, who was running against Ted Cruz, was only a point behind. Well, he lost by 10 points. How could he be a point behind?
Well,
the thing too, Bill, that I want to bring up, I tell you what, let's take a break because this is going to be extended, but I want to bring up the whole question of abortion, because the abortion script didn't work the way they had planned it. In fact, it failed, I think, pretty bad. So let me take a little break, and then we'll pick up on that and also a couple of other things about the election. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be back with our friend Bill right after this. Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We call this thing the Week in Review, but we're focusing on the elections that just happened yesterday. Bill, I always enjoy doing this to you. So another anniversary. This one, 1860, Abraham Lincoln was elected today for the first time on this day in 1860. So that was a pretty consequential election. To say the least, Abraham Lincoln. Let me get back to the abortion story, because if you had visited Texas over the last 2 months of this campaign for the Senate between Ted Cruz and Colin Allred, and you had turned on the television, you would have seen one after another after another after another of abortion ads against Ted Cruz. It was intense. I mean, it was one after another, one after another, one after another. The entire campaign against Ted Cruz was based on abortion. Nothing else. They had no other issue. You know, nothing else. And it didn't work. I mean, the women in Texas didn't buy it, but the women in the country didn't buy it, which I hope maybe finally the Democrats will begin to realize that there is an abortion position they can take that isn't as radical, Bill.
Hold on just a second. Kamala Harris just came out to address the crowd.
Already.
And she was not introduced. She just walked out by herself.
What is she wearing? That's to be of interest.
Wearing
so there she is. I see her. I got my little tablet on.
Yeah.
Waving.
A brown
there
pantsuit. Yes.
All right. I thought maybe she dressed in red today. Like the first lady. Well, no, let her get, I mean, look, I think this is a nice thing that happens in our elections. The loser does it. I mean, I'm happy. I'm happy to see a concession. I think it's the right thing to do. And I hope she speaks about unity and wishes the best to President Trump. And but I have to, before I get back to abortion and that it didn't work, somebody was asking me, I was on a radio interview, and somebody was asking me about the future of Kamala Harris. And I said, I think Kamala Harris is going to go back to California, and I don't think we'll ever see her again at the national level, Bill. Do you agree with that?
I fully agree with that. I mean, look, unless there's another miracle, you know, like the miracle of Donald Trump, but he worked for it. I mean, he wanted it. I think, you know, I'm looking at her now, her face is drawn, but, you know, she's well put together, hair all great and everything like that. I can understand her disappointment. I can understand how you could go through a presidential campaign and just be crushed like that. I mean, it wasn't even that close. I can't hear her because we're on the air, but she came out by herself. I like that. I mean, you know, she didn't require the full repertoire of introductions. And I think maybe she'll do something. The question is, by the way, and I think it's an important one to bring up here, she's still the vice president.
Sure.
Is she going to stay on for the rest of the administration? I think if I were in her position, I would resign the office and let the president choose another one for the next to serve in the next 6 months. And just, you know, disappear, because I don't know how she can work with him. I really don't.
I agree. Actually, I hadn't thought about that. The other possibility that I had thought about was that that she becomes president, you know, for a couple of months. That was the other thing. But that might be too much work and too much responsibility for her, and I don't get the impression she really wants that. I think she wants to go back to California, write a book, maybe become president of the university, and just sit out there and, you know, be a memory for many people. I mean, we're guessing. I guess I'm just guessing and speculating. But I don't think she has much of a future, because I think, Bill, that the Obama-Clinton wing of the party also went down last night.
I think you're
not going to see – I don't think that the governor of California, Shapiro, I don't have a feeling. I just think he's going to be calling Barack Obama and say, hey, Barack, show me how to be president in 28. I don't see that happening.
It's Pennsylvania, by the way. He's governor of Pennsylvania.
Yes.
He is the most intriguing person in this whole story, because he is, right now, he is the most important person in the Democratic Party. I mean, he is, if not the titular head of the party, he's the guy everybody is afraid of. And imagine being in the position of running against Josh Shapiro for the Democratic nomination. It's going to be very, very difficult.
Yeah, and the whole thing about identity politics, Bill, I think really went down last.
I
wouldn't be surprised if the Democrat Party in 2028 ends up nominating a couple of white guys like Shapiro and maybe the governor of Kentucky, Beshear.
That's possible. Well, remember – go ahead.
No, I was just saying that's a couple of, you know, governors. Now, Beshear might not carry Kentucky Kentucky. He may not carry Kentucky. And that's the problem he has, because, you know, Trump won Kentucky like by 30 points. And Beshear I'm not sure he can carry Kentucky in a presidential election, but,
well,
you know, I'm guessing
4 years is
say that.
4 years is a long time. And we, you know, the people are already talking about 28, but 4 years is a very, very long time. Look at what happened in 16 weeks of 1 year here in 2024. the Shapiro thing is interesting because had she carried Pennsylvania last night, I think it would have been a very different race. And now the finger pointing is going to begin because she could have had him as her vice president. And she chose the nondescript governor of Minnesota, who the camera just turned to him a minute ago. He's in the crowd. And the question is, why did she turn Shapiro down? He's one of the top vote getters in the Democratic Party. He is also, by the way, a protege of Barack Obama. Many people don't realize that. Now, he is a really terrific operator, but you know what they were saying, that she turned him down because he was Jewish. And the left wing of the party has dabbled in anti-Semitism. If that turns out to be true, I mean, Kamala Harris is going to have to take the heat, even if she's out of public life, because she could have cost the party the election. Will Shapiro be, well, as you said, 4 years is a long time. The Democratic Party has other people, but almost all of them are associated with the left wing. I mean, this country is not going to accept AOC as a presidential candidate, and they are not going to accept some of these other characters either. I think that both parties last night saw their extreme wings take a bad hit because Trump would not go along with some of them. And his vice presidential candidate is right wing, but he's not crazy. He's actually an extraordinarily thoughtful and articulate and literate man. So I think much of what you say is true. It was an evening of corrections, but not in the direction that the pollsters thought.
Right, and I think in the case of getting back to the point I was making about women and abortion, that was everything you heard, that somehow women were going to turn out in huge numbers for reproductive rights. And, I have to admit that after hearing it so much, I thought, oh, my gosh, they may end up defeating Ted Cruz over that. But it didn't matter here, and it didn't matter in Florida with Rick Scott. I mean, it seems like everything that, the Republicans were supposed to win, they won. And everything that the Democrats were supposed to lose, they lost. I mean, the famous blue wall doesn't exist. I mean, it's all red again. And I guess now we're down to two states, Nevada and Arizona, and that's it. And I have no idea why in Arizona they only have 60% of the vote counted. I have no idea what kind of system they have, but that's a disgrace as far as I'm concerned, Bill.
Well, of course it is. Well, it's a strange state. But apparently, Maricopa County is the big cheese down there, and I don't know what's being counted and what's not. But I think that Trump is going to be the president-elect. None of these states that he carried are really in contention any longer. I don't see anybody running to a microphone and saying there was cheating in my state. There was cheating in my state. Nothing. I don't think she would allow it. I think that she wants to leave with a little bit of style. I'm watching her right now, but I can't hear her. We'll have to see later what the transcript is. I always read the transcript to see what she's actually saying. And I think that she looks very angry right now. She's giving one of her lectures. I think she probably wants to go out in style. I think her husband, who would have been the first gentleman, wants to go out in style, they got taken to the cleaners. They really did. And I think one of the reasons may have been that she knows that she's not all that likable. She was told bluntly that some people wanted her off the ticket because a lot of people don't like her. She may have tried to be too likable, and I think maybe she lost some of the effect. Whereas Trump, he never seems to care if anybody likes him. I mean, you got to give
him credit. Everybody knows
Trump
by now. And again, I go back to my example, the Patriots coach. I mean, if you were to – people in Patriot fans love the guy because he put up results. But if you talk to some of the players who played for him, again, with the exception of Brady, most of the other players thought the guy was obnoxious, that he, you couldn't talk to him, that he was very crazy, but, He could run for governor of Massachusetts and win, Bill. I mean, this guy is as popular as anybody anybody can be. But I just don't see her. I mean, look, I'm glad that she's making the concession speech. I see her on my little tablet here. She looks good. She looks nice. And I hope her speech is nice and conciliatory. I also hope, and I think this is a great opportunity for President Biden to leave in style. He needs to make sure that the transition is clean and professional, and he has to get rid of all these stupid cases against Trump. I think that's going to happen anyway. And basically just hope that Trump pardons him. I'm just going to say that. I'm sorry. I said that Biden should hope that Trump pardons him so that they can put that to rest, you know. And honestly, between you and me, Bill, I actually don't think it's a bad idea for President Trump to do that and just put all this behind us and say, hey, that's in the past. Yeah. I'm going to worry about the future, and I'm going to make America great again. Let's deal with issues. I think that would be a good idea for the country, Bill.
Well, that's true. And, you know, people forget the fact that we have had a national election last night, but a lot of countries in the world didn't have a national election last night. They're just going on with their with what they have to do, and they will all be looking at the American election. The memos are being written right now at the embassies in Washington. What happened? What do we do now? Can we trust the United States? Are they coming back to a position of power? I think secretly many of the countries overseas were rooting for Trump to win because with Trump they had a they have a strong president, and American strength is what protects them. You know,
Kamala Harris, you're exactly. She's done. She's going. Or I was talking to a Mexican friend, and he was saying, well, which one do you think is going to be better for Mexico? I think she's finished, yeah. And I said, which one? There she goes. I think that was a pretty quick speech, but
for her,
we'll read this later. But it looks, at least from the face, from the what I see on the screen, that it was a good speech. But anyway, Bill, a friend of mine was asking, you know, what's better for Mexico, let's say. And I said, you know, it's a strong American economy will do wonders for the world, number one. In America that doesn't get pushed around, everybody understands that without the United States, the world just doesn't function. And when you've got people shooting at commercial ships in the Mediterranean, you've got Iran behaving like they do, you know, it's nice to know that the lion is back in the jungle, Bill.
Well, I fully agree with you. I think that I'm looking specifically at what you just mentioned, and that is the Hutus and the it's actually not the Mediterranean; it's the Red Sea down there, where they have been firing at American ships. I mean, when you fire at American ships in the country I grew up in, the American ships fire back, and apparently they were under some restriction. I think a few of them did fire some shots, but I think it's going to be made very clear if you fire at an American ship, we're going to sink your ship. And with Trump, they will know it's true. So maybe we will get that peace through strength effect that it leads to peace. I think what he wants, I think what Trump wants, he wants the Middle East war to be wrapped up before he takes the oath of office. He doesn't want to get trapped in that thing. And
well,
I think
Ukraine.
Ukraine also.
I think he wants that settled. Because I don't think you're right. I don't think he wants to be messing with it, and I think he wants to get that settled. Let me pursue a couple of other areas here, Bill. The Senate. I thought the Senate last night was incredible. Right now, the Republicans have 52. There are two really good possibilities, PA and Nevada. Arizona is probably a long shot, but it's getting closer all the time, and they still have a lot of votes to count. I'm very disappointed at what happened in Wisconsin and Michigan. Very close elections. But, you know, Rogers didn't win Michigan, and that other gentleman didn't win Wisconsin. So that's gone. But 54 senators. Pardon?
The one in Wisconsin was particularly disappointing because Tammy
yes.
Baldwin is a real Marxist. I mean, she's about the most left-wing member of the Democratic Senate delegation, and she won by a whisker. And that was probably Madison, Wisconsin, that got her the election, because they're, you know, they're over there weeping over the death of Stalin.
Yeah, that's the University of Wisconsin crowd.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean,
yeah,
they
no,
can
that,
do without.
And he was such a good candidate, too.
Yes,
Eric,
he was.
Hobie, I think,
Brown.
Is his name.
Hobie,
yeah.
Yes, Hobie.
Yeah, he was such a good candidate. I mean, I have friends up there who told me he was just an absolutely great candidate. So he went down by nothing. And in Michigan, Rogers went down by not much. You wonder,
not
though,
much.
Bill, these two Democrats elected in this environment, you wonder if when they go back to the Senate, they realize that they're going back to a different world. Because not just
yes.
are they going to be part of the minority, but the issues that elected people in this election are not issues that favored Biden or Harris, Bill.
Well, that's true. Things turned out, the imagery of the election turned out so differently than what we expected. I mean, first of all, I am amazed that there was not any violence anywhere and that people accepted the decision. Now, maybe that's because they weren't that passionate about Kamala Harris in the first place, or maybe they just said, look, we're not going to ruin this. Here, I see the crowd is walking out from the meeting area in Howard University. There's no sign of any violence. There's no sign of any demonstration. That's the way it should be.
That's it. No, I agree. And as I said, I didn't hear the speech, but the body language looked fine. And I hope she goes back to being vice president and enjoys
well,
the last couple of months. Enjoys the last couple
that,
of months.
Well, if she remains as vice president.
Mentioned that before, yeah. I didn't think about that, but that would be, that would be a possibility. I hadn't thought about that. I mean, it's not going to be fun going to work for the next 2 months in that workplace. She cannot enjoy going into a White House where they don't like her. I mean, it's just not going to be any fun. I don't know how else to say. Bill, let me ask you one more thing here before we go, and that is the media itself. Last night, I didn't watch MSNBC, but I've seen some clicks.
Yeah.
Some.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was almost, it was hysterical. And this lady,
yes.
Joy Reid, or whatever her name is, absolutely
Joy
hysterical.
Joy
That's
Reid.
Right. And then today on The View, it was even more hysterical. How much longer can these people, can news organizations keep programs like these on the air? I mean, they're basically catering to a very small group, and you would think that MSNBC could double, triple their audience if they were just doing straight news and would drop
yeah,
all this
could.
Garbage every night.
Well, they do, but they actually have, for a niche network, the division of NBC, but they actually have a pretty good audience, and I think their feeling is we probably can't do better with another program because the people who watch us love us. You know, they have the far left, the far feminists, but that turns out to be probably an audience large enough to justify it. You know, they get the neat commercials they need and the funds they need. I don't know if they're going to change. They might, of course, NBC might be sold and they might be taken off the air. I don't know what CNN is going to do. I think CNN is in a much worse position because even though they did an honorable job in most of the election reportings last night, but my God, they became unwatchable during the campaign. They became the anti-Trump network. It was impossible
right.
to watch them with any confidence. I don't know. They're very down in the ratings already. I think there may be a point where the company that owns them right now may say this just isn't worth it anymore.
Well, that's
I mean,
it. And
very
difference
large organization.
NBC. is that MSNBC is so crazy that they can be entertaining. Just to watch 10 minutes of it and you laugh your head off. Whereas CNN is boring. There's nothing. I mean, it's a boring, I mean, that whole thing is boring. But I do think the media has to, I don't know if you saw Scott Jennings last night. There was one little segment spoke about the media. I didn't watch it live. I just saw the clip. And he was basically, you know, speaking to the media saying, hey, you know, we exaggerated the Lynn Cheney factor. You know, she was supposed to be, and that turned out to be a bust. I mean, Lynn Cheney came down to Texas and endorsed Colin Allred for the Senate. I mean, how crazy is that? So I think like Lynn Cheney and some of these others who I used to admire so much, I think they need to, she needs to go back to Wyoming and sort of take a little time off and realize that she made a fool out of herself, Bill.
I think so. I mean, once she was defeated, you know, she used to be a member of the House leadership, the House Republican leadership. She's Dick Cheney's daughter, and respected for her views. But when she pulled this, I mean, if she had said, I have differences with Mr. Trump. I respect his foreign policy positions, but I'm not going to take an active part. Or she could have resigned. People say, well, okay, I don't agree with her, but at least she has a soul. But to do what she did and to drag her father into it, I mean, her father doesn't believe in one thing that Kamala Harris advocates. I mean, I think they sullied their reputation. You can resign under principle. You know, people forget that many leading Democrats turned against Franklin Roosevelt over the third term issue.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Right. We're acting out of principle.
Acting out of principle. And some of them were some of the biggest people in the Democratic Party, and they parted with Roosevelt. Roosevelt was he was a controversial president, and there were people in the country, as I said before, who loved him, people who hated him. But he turned his back on some of his closest friends in order to run for a third term. And, of course, he won decisively, and that he knew he was going to win.
Right. Well, I have to tell you a couple of things. I did not actually hear. I don't know how much Lynn Cheney brought her father into this without the father's consent, because I have never actually heard, maybe you have, former Vice President Cheney endorse, out of his own mouth, I mean, endorse Kamala Harris. I know that here in Texas, former President Bush did not say anything. He said, I'm not going to tell you who I'm going to vote for. And today he put out this beautiful tweet, absolutely elegant and classy tweet, congratulating Trump and thanking Biden and Harris for their service. I mean, this is super elegant and classy. I don't know who he voted for. I would bet you a cup of coffee he did not vote for Kamala Harris, or maybe he voted for himself. I have no idea. There was a Libertarian on the ticket or the ballot. Maybe he voted for him. But I thought Bush handled it very well. I thought Mitt Romney handled it well. He didn't say, you know, he wasn't out there campaigning against Trump. He said, I don't like him. I'm not going to vote for him, but I'm not going to tell you who I'm voting for. I think that's more respectful, and I feel better. Poor Lynn Cheney. When she came down here, Bill, and she starts campaigning against Ted Cruz, I'm sitting there saying, wait a minute, what do you believe anymore, Lynn Cheney? What is it that motivates you? Is it just hating Trump? Is that what this is all about? Because everything that Colin Allred stands for, Lynn Cheney didn't. And they were both in the Congress at the same time, Bill.
Yes. Well, that's the point. I mean, you can resign in principle, but you never go out and help a side that you really disagree with just because of spite. You know? And I think it was
right.
Spite.
No, I think you're right.
Very,
looks bad.
Very personal. Very personal. She feels she was very badly treated by the party. By the way, we said Lynn Cheney. I think we meant Liz Cheney.
Yeah, Liz Cheney, the daughter. Yeah, the daughter.
Yes, Lynn Cheney is the wife.
The wife.
A beautiful person. It was so obviously. Yes. a wonderful educator. And I just think the whole Cheney thing, I think she made her parents do things they really didn't want to do.
I wouldn't be surprised if Vice President Cheney, well, I cannot prove it, but it's just hard for me to believe. I voted for him twice, and I just have a hard time believing that he wants activist liberal judges in the Supreme
Court. Right. Yes.
I just don't buy that. Well, Bill, we got something to look forward to next week. I guess we start talking about the cabinet now. And let me propose a couple of names, and we can talk about it next week.
Right. Okay.
Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo. Bring him back.
Yep.
I loved him.
Yeah.
I loved him.
Me too.
Man, Secretary of Energy, the fellow from North Dakota, the governor from up there.
Governor,
can't think
great
of his
choice.
Yeah, great choice.
Bergen.
And here's Bergen. The blockbuster. This is the one that maybe you may not be expecting. Attorney General. How about Ted Cruz?
What, I'm laughing only because he would make a brilliant attorney general. You know, Alan Dershowitz said he was one of the most brilliant students he ever had. He would make a terrific attorney general. I think he would be confirmed. He is not lovable. You don't turn to him as a lawyer if you've had a fender bender. You know, he's not
well,
that
well, the
type.
Attorney general sometimes has to do some tough things.
Yeah,
and
I think he would be great.
He would be great, and from an integrity standpoint, I have no problems. So I think that the Justice Department has to be cleaned up. So would do a good job of that. So there's just a crazy idea. Maybe Trump has another person in mind, but Ted Cruz would be my choice if you called me on the phone.
Well, I think that's a terrific choice. So far, so good. By the way, for Defense Secretary, also, if Pompeo doesn't go to state, he would make a terrific Defense Secretary.
Yes,
he really
he
knows
would.
His stuff.
He really does, and I can't think.
Surprised. I'm sorry. Hello.
No, I was going to say that I think he's got some good choices. But we've got some good material to cover over the next few weeks over the cabinet. So I guess we'll start speculating about that. I'm sure he'll be naming people pretty soon, Bill.
I think he probably has the list made up. Yeah. What I would like to see in the White House as a cabinet member, the senator from Louisiana, John Kennedy. He's so quotable. People love him. And
right.
He'd
make
a good
attorney general too, Bill. He'd make a good attorney general too because he's
a
lawyer.
He would. He is.
He would make a good attorney general. Senator Cotton would be my choice for defense.
Yes. Well, I hope he is chosen as one of the top people because Cotton is the kind of a guy you can put into almost any position, and you'll know it'll be a good job. Remember that the key position in the White House is White House Chief of Staff, and he's got
right.
to make a good choice that he doesn't get into a fight with. Apparently, according to the news media, some in the news media, that he may very well choose his campaign manager. Is it Stiles? She's a woman very powerful woman that nobody knows. But she said,
and good manager, from what I understand, which is what he needs in the White House, because Trump needs
excellent. That's
right. Trump needs a good manager who can keep him in line. Yeah, you're right. That would be a good choice. Well, Bill, have a good week, and I'm sure there's more
elections.
I think it's the kind of week we should have more weeks like this.
Absolutely.
Right,
okay,
Bill.
Well, Silvio, I look forward to talking to you the next time.
All right, my friend Bill. You have a great week.
Same to you.
All right. Our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, talking about this crazy election that ended. But now, of course, governing begins, and especially the cabinet. And that's going to be a lot of fun to speculate who makes it or doesn't make it. Great day, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.